The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stadtmiller, with you on this Tuesday, 28 January 2020. And let me see. Kobe Bryant still dead. Yep, that hasn't changed. I am really amazed. I guess the guy did some things outside of the basketball court, but why this? You know, this, Mike, this reminds me of what they do on college campuses with the candlelight vigils to try to connect people with community to make them care about something that they wouldn't normally care about. And as I was watching this unfold yesterday on the medias, football players are honoring Kobe Bryant. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, wait a minute. Is this one of this community touchstone, let's all huddle and cry together? And trust me, folks, I mean, Kobe Bryant losing his life at the age of 41, the guy's got more money than I've ever had or would have in 10 lifetimes. I get that. And he was a successful basketball player. I get that as well. But there's also, the guy's not pristine. He was charged, I guess, and did the case go away, or was the guy guilty of aggressively, politely raping women? I don't know. But there were big question marks in the guy and his conduct. But that doesn't really seem to matter when you're a guy that brings in millions and millions and millions of dollars in revenue. They got to have their stars, folks. You know, it's not about the game anymore. It's about the stars. You know, I often wondered in professional football, I loved it when the NFL players went on strike and the so-called scabs came in to play football games. It was still a football game. It was still the same rules. It was still you have to get a touchdown, 6 points, and kicks the extra. That's a point. And yeah. But it wasn't the million-dollar babies that were out there. It were people that loved to play football. And, of course, these strikes shortened seasons, didn't last all season, and they went back to work. My point being that, yeah, it's sad that Kobe Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter died in a helicopter crash along with several other people. That is tragic. But not anything to the magnitude of you would have thought the Pope died yesterday. As a matter of fact, I don't even think that the Pope would have gotten that much coverage. But Kobe Bryant, you know, in our star-driven, you know, chrome-plated, slick presentation of everything, you know, the system that we've created, it's a splash and the flash that's important, not the substance and the content. Wow. At any rate. Well, I can't ignore this thing staring me in the face. Trump's Middle East peace plan calls for two states with Palestinian capital in East Jerusalem. Now, I don't know if you've been following this. I watched a good portion of this today. And you would have thought they anointed a new pope the way everybody was clapping. What am I stuck on the pope here for today? President Donald Trump's long-awaited Middle East peace plan calls for a state of Palestine with a capital in East Jerusalem. He said this during an event today with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The plan calls for the recognition of Israeli settlements in the West Bank in exchange for a 4-year freeze on new settlement activity. It will double the territory under the control of the Palestinians, Trump said. Now, you understand the obvious foundation of this. Prior to 1948, we had a state called Palestine. Post-1948, we still had a state called Palestine, but there was this little infectious nodule that cropped up right in the middle of Palestine. Oh, it was called Israel. Now, they were looking for, and this was landlocked, folks. This is not seaport access. You know, this isn't any great shakes. This was a plot of land inside pretty much the center of Palestine. And they said, oh, goody for us. Then what they set about doing was what I have the problem with here. They kept expanding, kept claiming more Palestinian territory as their own. This was outright theft. It was unlawful. It was illegal. Give it a name. So we're going to do a 4-year freeze on new settlement activity, and they're going to double the territory under the control of the Palestinians. They had the control over the entire territory before. What kind of deal is this? Let's make a deal. I take curtain number 3. Oh, it's old Jay back there with some old swayback horse. Sorry, you lose. What? Well, the Palestinians have refused to engage with the White House and not expected to accept this deal. Well, don't worry, folks. There's a little bit of bribery and payoff going on here. Let me continue. Trump's long-awaited Middle East peace plan calls for that state. Okay, it said that. The plan calls for the recognition of Israeli state. Okay, I said that. The president also said that the U.S. will proudly open up an embassy in the new Palestinian capital. As if they needed a new one. They just need the old one. He claimed that the plan would lead to a $50 billion in new commercial investment in Palestine, that if executed well, it could create 1 million new Palestinian jobs. So the bribery is we're going to give you the taxation system. What we're going to create for the Palestinians is something akin to what we have here in the United States. Yeah. Kind of like goes with corporate McDonald's and, you've got that hierarchy corporate kind of thing going on there, and then you got, well, taxation, of course, and then you got government intervention with rules and regulations and all that other stuff. And you're going to create a million. What if the Palestinians don't want the new high-rise, ultra-modern 21st century? Yeah, we're going to give you this business model. What if they don't want it? If they had wanted it, don't you think they would have attempted to do that before? I mean, they had trade and they had business over in Palestine, but they weren't I don't want to say the term capitalist system because that term has been misused a lot, but they didn't want to set up a big commercial system where everything is, you know, labeled and tagged and manufactured and inspected and rejected and detected and all that other stuff. You get my meaning. Well, the proposal favors Israel and was immediately rejected by Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. After the nonsense that we heard today, we say 1,000 no's to the deal of the century, Abbas said, according to the Associated Press. Palestinians have cited Trump policies such as moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem as evidence of pro-Israeli bias that prevents the administration from being a neutral party in negotiations. Guess what, folks? Palestinians also consider this to be biased because what? Well, Israel gets $30 billion plus a year. They've got all kinds of contracts over there enriching them. And you know what the Palestinians are getting? Squat. Trump even admitted, well, I cut off the funding to Palestinians. Is that really going to help them? Oh, you're putting sanctions on a conquered and vanquished people. You want to dance on their graves? You want to do the old Texas two-step Donnie on their graves, too? You might as well, you sellout son of a bugger. I said it. Wonder if Steve Elkins heard that. I'm sure that echoed right through his head. Dampening the plans, chances further. What? This is an AP story. Dampening the plans, chances further. Okay. It should read further dampening the plans, but hey, I'm not an English major. The foreign minister of Jordan, Israel's neighbor to the east, on Tuesday rejected a proposed recognition of Israeli settlements. Yeah, why do you think they did that? Because it's sitting on their land. And Israel went about setting up and building their little towns and their little cities on land that used to belong to the Palestinians. But okay, here's the hook. You know, we're not going to do anything for 4 years on this. And we're going to bribe you with $50 billion. And we're going to get in there and work this and massage this really well. So Israel comes out on top on the deal. And to this day, folks, I can tell you that Israel does not want to recognize Palestine. They do not want a two-state solution. They're selling the hell out of this. And I'm just wondering what little traps and conniving schemes are going to have in the future to, go after Iran and try to finish off Syria. Not dead yet, on the rebound. I wonder what they're going to have in plan here for the future. Now, despite the deal's long odds of success, I would say, Mr. Trump is suggesting that the peace plan marked an historic step forward. No, Mr. Trump, what would have been an unprecedented historic step forward was to suggest to the land-stealing Israelis that, hey, you need to go back to what you originally had. You want more? Engage with the Palestinians. You ever heard about buying real estate rather than stealing it? Maybe you should try that. But, of course, everything dealing with Israel is cockeyed, upset, and upside down. You know, are we over there to hold hands with the Israelis to fight these evil Islamists over there? Or was it the United States and Israel that have exactly provoked that scenario? I think you already know the answer to that. Well, and according to old BB, this is an unprecedented and highly significant development. Well, here's a little blurb from this, a little outtakes. And this is hard for me to listen to because this is international butt-kissing. And just listen to the raves of the people that were taking part in this ceremony at the White House.
Come on. Today, Israel takes a big step towards peace. Young people across the Middle East are ready for a more hopeful future. And governments throughout the region are realizing that terrorism and Islamic extremism are everyone's common enemy. Yesterday, I had the pleasure of meeting with both the Prime Minister of Israel and a man that's working very hard to become the Prime Minister of Israel in the longest running election of all time, Benny Gantz, of the Blue and White Party, and both leaders joined me to express their support for this effort, proving that the State of Israel looking for peace and that peace transcends politics by any measure, unmeasurable, that's what they want. On my first trip overseas as president, I visited the Holy Land of Israel. I was deeply moved and amazed by what this small country had achieved in the face of overwhelming odds and never-ending threats. The State of Israel comprises only a minuscule amount of land in the Middle East, and yet it has become a thriving center of democracy, innovation, culture, and commerce. Israel is a light unto the world. The hearts and history of our people are woven together. The Land of Israel is an ancient home, a sacred place of worship, and a solemn promise to the Jewish people that we will never again repeat history's darkest hour. During my trip to Israel, I also met with Palestinian President Abbas in Bethlehem. I was saddened by the fate of the Palestinian people. They deserve a far better life. They deserve the chance to achieve their extraordinary potential. Palestinians have been trapped in a cycle of terrorism, poverty, and violence.
I've got to stop this. They've been trapped in violence and terrorism. Who's been doing the terroristic actions? Has it not been Israel? This entire thing is flipped. If the American people had a clear and concise view of Israel, and it was put in terms such as we described, I mean, we don't couch this stuff, we don't powder it up and put lipstick on it and call it other than what it is, a pig. We don't do that. And that offends some people, as I recognized yesterday, but it is what it is. And no matter how you try to think about this or rearrange your thoughts to say that this is an okay action for a country that didn't exist prior to 1948, set up shop, militarily take over Palestine. And that's basically what they have done. Now, the governments, the ring knockers of the world, the good old boys club, call it what you will, they've been in favor of this. But the people themselves that understand that, you know, the normal living and dying process is left up to what? The people. And they see people's lives getting cut short, and they see their stuff being stolen. And they see a disregard and a disrespect for human life such as the world has never seen since, okay, let me use it, since the Great Holocaust. Israel has been performing Holocaust maneuvers on the Palestinian for a number of years now, haven't they? How else can you justify taking somebody else's land, putting them into what is, and you never hear this mentioned on American news media, that's for damn sure, pretty much shoving the Palestinians into little strips of land and them becoming the, by every definition that I can think of, open-air prisons. Because that's what they are. I'm sorry, I'm not done throwing up here. What do you have? Do you have more to say on this, Mr. Trump? Oh, I'm sure that he does.
Exploited by those seeking to use them as pawns to advance terrorism and extremism. I returned from my visit determined to find a constructive path, and it's got to be a very powerful path forward in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. To further this effort, I also met with President Abbas at the White House. Forging peace between Israelis and Palestinians may be the most difficult challenge of all.
Okay, let me try to get my mind wrapped around this. Let's see if I can come up with an analogy that fits the scenario. We're invaded by Mexico. Mexican army. I know, just go with me here for a minute. We're invaded by Mexico. They take over Texas and Arizona, New Mexico and California, and then they want the rest of it. Okay, they're now occupiers and pretty much illegals in this country, Mexicans and OTMs, as they've lovingly been referred to, other than Mexicans. They come into the country. Now they're what? Well, they're in the country illegally, that's for sure. Yeah, that's established. But they want to make it theirs. What was now ours, they want to make theirs. So they occupy. That's the best term for it. It's an occupation. And say that they bring over more people. They just ignore that southern border. They've ignore U.S. law, international law, anything to do with border and border security and all that stuff, and we just have this mass invasion. And basically, they take over everything. Would you, as an American, sit back and let that happen? And if you resisted that, depending on whose viewpoint and how this is being described, would you accept that, oh, well, you're the extremist, well, you're the terrorist, because look what you're doing to these people? But folks, this is not a joke. This is not a joke. And the suffering of the Palestinian people for over 65, 70 years has not been chronicled. It's not been reported correctly. It's been left out of the news. And we're told that these people are extremists and terrorists, and, well, they fired bottle rockets into Israel, and Israel had to respond. Ah, horse manure. Ah, horse manure. These are a vanquished and damn near totally conquered people. Would we be acting the same way if Russia invaded us, or China, or, as my maybe not so great analogy, Mexico invaded with other than Mexicans, and they just rolled into the country and took over and says, eh, it used to be yours, now it's ours? Would you stand for that? Of course you wouldn't. Does the news show the IDF and the videos that they've taken blowing limbs off of Palestinian children, unarmed children? Do you think that that would cast an international glowing light on Israel? Or do you think people would go, wait a minute here? And when the bow broke, really, on I've had enough of Israel and their crap, do you think the news headlines worldwide would remain the same if the people themselves of the respective countries go, no, we're not buying your bunk, we don't think so? This is the most astounding thing that I think I've seen in my entire lifetime. The people that are still bilking the Holocaust stuff turned right around and committed a Holocaust on other people, and everybody looks the other way. Nothing to see here. Let's just move on. All those evil Palestinians, oh, look how violent they're being. Shut up. I am sick of it. Donnie, did you really want to become president in 2020? Did you really want a renewal of that job title? You better hope that you have all the blacks and all the Hispanics in this country voting in the next election, because I know a great number of people that are sitting here right now with a cocked eyebrow and a jaundiced eye looking at you in disbelief. This is not a peace plan. This is to get Palestine to recognize Israel, to get the Palestinians to recognize their conquerors, their vanquishers, their occupiers as legitimate. That's what this is about. See, this was always the rub in this two-state solution. Wait a minute, we got invaders, they came in and, okay, well, now they've taken that much. Okay, now we come up with a two-state solution. It wasn't theirs to begin with. That's like allowing a robber into your house. He comes in and says, okay, well, for the sake of nobody getting hurt, let's make this as clean and as possible. And okay, I'm going to take half and I'll leave you with half. Which half do you want to give up? But wait a minute, it's all mine. No, not anymore. Here's the deal. You either give me half or I'm going to take all of it. And if you don't want to do that, I'll just destroy the whole place. And you don't get nothing. Oh, by the way, did I mention that you might lose your life in this little process as well? Astounding.
All prior administrations from President Lyndon Johnson have tried and bitterly failed. But I was not elected to do small things or shy away from big problems.
And that's the entire Jewish lobby sitting there applauding Trump.
It's been a long and very arduous process to arrive at this moment. On Sunday, I delivered to Prime Minister Netanyahu my vision for peace, prosperity, and a brighter future for the Israelis and Palestinians. This vision for peace is fundamentally different from past proposals. In the past, even the most well-intentioned plans were light on factual details and heavy on conceptual frameworks. By contrast, our plan is 80 pages and is the most detailed proposal ever put forward by far. As I have seen throughout my long career as a deal maker, complex problems require nuanced, fact-based remedies. That is why our proposal provides precise technical solutions to make Israelis, Palestinians, and the region safer and much more prosperous. My vision presents a win-win opportunity for both sides, a realistic two-state solution that resolves the risk of Palestinian statehood to Israel's security. Today, Israel has taken a giant step toward peace. Yesterday, Prime Minister Netanyahu informed me that he is willing to endorse the vision as the basis for direct negotiations. And I will say the general also endorsed, and very strongly, with the Palestinians, a historic breakthrough. And likewise, we have really a situation having to do with a race that is taking place right now. It will end, and we have the support, and it's very important to say this, of both parties and almost all people in Israel. They want peace, and they want peace badly.
Oh, what they want is another piece of Palestinian land.
This is the first time Israel has authorized the release of a conceptual map illustrating the territorial compromises it's willing to make for the cause of peace, and they've gone a long way. This is an
This is the first time that Israel has released a map as to their intentions on what they plan on keeping and what might be negotiable. I'm sorry, Mr. President, can we see the original Palestinian map with Israel first being set up in 1948? Can we see that map? And then through the progressive years, how less and less of that Palestinian land actually was stolen and claimed by Israel? Can we see that map? I'm sorry. What a load of garbage. Oh, you might as well finish up, Prez. We've come this far.
Unprecedented and highly significant development. Mr. Prime Minister, thank you for having the courage to take this bold step forward.
Legitimizing the theft of another country. Thank you for taking these bold steps. You know, for people out there that don't believe in God and the devil and heaven and hell and all that stuff, if you don't believe in that, don't you just want to believe in it? So you make sure that people like Bibi Netanyahu burn eternally? There'll be more about this in the coming days, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, watch how the press covers the pushback by the Palestinians going, you want us to do what? And how that's covered and bent in the news. Palestinians are going to end up being the bad guys here. The vanquished, the conquered, the dead.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold, arms and or legs often go to sleep, sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe, short walks cause cramping or pains in legs, memory is not as good as it used to be, ankles swell late in the day, chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Switching gears and sliding in from one theft to another, only this time it shows its ugly face by way of Federal Reserve. Fed repos have plowed $6.6 trillion to Wall Street in 4 months. That's 34% of its feeding tube during epic financial crash. According to the data made available on public website of the New York Fed, since September 17th of last year, it has funneled a cumulative total of $6.6 trillion to some of the 24 trading houses on Wall Street that are known as its primary dealers. The giant sum has been sluiced to Wall Street in the form of repurchase agreement. They call them repo loans, without any details being provided to the elected representatives in Congress as to which firms are getting the money or what it's being ultimately used for. But since the stock market has set repeated new highs since the program launched, some veteran market watchers believe the Fed is fueling a Ponzi-like rally in stocks. Well, believe it, because it's true. When the nonpartisan investigative arm of Congress, the General Accountability Office, okay, that's their claim, not mine, tallied up with the cumulative total that the Fed Reserve has secretly sluiced to Wall Street from December 2007 through July 21st, 2010, that little price tag came to $16.1 trillion. When those other programs are added, the Levy Economics Institute, using the Fed's own data, arrived at the tally of $19.559 trillion to Wall Street trading houses and another $10 trillion in central bank liquidity swaps, bringing the bailout figure to over $29 trillion. Now, why is it essential to report the cumulative tally that the New York Fed pumped during the crisis and is doing once again to Wall Street trading houses? As L. Randall Ray wrote in 2011 to explain Levy's calculations, the cumulative lending by the Fed contributes to our understanding of the depths of the Wall Street bank's problems. That's kind of an understatement. The fact that both the auditors of the GAO and the university academics working on behalf of the Levy Economics Institute found the cumulative tally to be important means that it is important to report it to the American people. Well, might as well, because they're on the hook to pay for it. There are other key reasons to keep a close tab on the cumulative tally. The cumulative tally during the financial crisis was a measure of just how long an emergency response from the New York Fed was needed to calm an epic financial crash on Wall Street. The GAO measured the response from December 2007 to July 21, 2010, a period of time, more than 2.5 years, that it took the New York Fed that long and trillions of dollars to calm markets was indicative of just how incompetent it and other federal regulators of Wall Street had been in reining in wild gambles that were occurring in derivatives across Wall Street. And that was a setup, folks. Trust me. They opened the gates, took advantage of it, did the biggest ripoff ever witnessed by mankind, and then stood around and said, "What, me?" The Fed's own neglect role in supervising Wall Street banks may well explain why it battled in court for more than 2 years to keep the details of its loan a secret from Congress and the American people. That is a fact. Then as now, the Fed loans were being made at a ridiculously low rate of interest that would not even been available to AAA credit-rated corporations. Many of these Wall Street trading houses were either insolvent or teetering on the verge of insolvency, so the cheap loans, a significant portion of which were made at less than 1% interest, folks, were a subsidy to Wall Street, a form of corporate welfare at a time when the same banks were charging customers double-digit interest rates on their credit cards. Bloomberg Markets magazine reported in January 2012 that the underpriced loans amounted to $13 billion in extra income for the good old poor me Wall Street banks. Today, repo loans are being made at 1.55 to 1.57% interest by the New York Fed. On September 17th of 2019, the free market wanted to price those loans at 10%. That's when the New York Fed pumped in, vigorously and jumped in with both feet with a pile of money priced at fictionist interest rates. The cumulative tallies also allowed a measure of this current unnamed crisis that has prompted the New York Fed to plow that $6.6 trillion into Wall Street in a period of 4 months. For example, during the first week of the Fed's repo loan program in 2019, from September 17th through September 24th, the New York Fed cumulatively plowed $373.9 billion into those trading houses of Wall Street using those repo loans. Now, compare that dollar figure to the amount of New York Fed pumped into its primary dealers during the pivotal week of the worst financial collapse since the Great Depression. On Monday, September 15, 2008, the century-old Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy. That was a giant insurer, AIG, which was the counterparty to tens of billions of Wall Street's derivative bets. Was put into receivership with the U.S. government, and a 94-year-old Merrill Lynch was teetering so badly under subprime debt losses that it had to merge with the Bank of America. From September 15, 2008 through September 22, 2008, the New York Fed provided cumulative liquidity of $285 billion under its repo loan program, $88.9 billion less than during its first week of repo operations last year. Now, this comes despite the fact that the federal regulator of the national banks, the Office of the Comptroller of Currency, the OCC, reported in December that just four Wall Street banks hold 87.2% of all derivatives in the entire banking industry. Those four Wall Street banks, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, and Bank of America, have notional exposure face amount of $175 trillion in derivatives. Did you hear that? Looking equally out to lunch, the November 17, 2019 minutes of the Financial Stability Oversight Council, FSOC, if you will, did not mention one word about the trillions of dollars in repo loans the New York Fed is pumping into Wall Street. FSOC was created under the Dodd-Frank financial reform legislation of 2010 to monitor and prevent a potential crisis on Wall Street that might once again destroy the U.S. economy. Last Friday's trading action seemed to flatly contradict Fed Chairman Powell's assessment that the core of the financial sector appears resilient. The S&P 500 index closed down just 0.90%, but shares of J.P. Morgan Chase significantly outpaced those losses with a decline of 2.48%. And so the shell game goes on. Jeff Bennett, you've been watching and monitoring this economy, the shenanigans financially, this repo stuff, the madcap bailouts, businesses and banks too big to fail.
A long time. However, you made a comment a moment ago about going out to lunch. The way things are in this country today, I can't afford to go out to lunch. Can you? It's gotten insane. Unbelievably insane. I did some stuff on the program this morning that indicative in a lot of respects of what's going on. The banks, some of the ongoing theft with J.P. Morgan, the singular most profitable bank of every bank in this country, and they're doing it by massive theft in so many respects. Some of the other headlines we start looking at is the insanity of the mortgage nonsense. They've gotten very, very loose with mortgage stuff again, very badly. And I think we're going to be facing exactly what we did, 13 years ago? Mm-hmm. People don't realize it was 13 years ago, people, that it all crashed. Oh. And they're not paying attention.
Jeff, I've been paying attention because it's been hurting us badly all these years.
Absolutely no two ways about it. Trying to get over to a page here. Got a bunch of stuff going on. Some of the headlines, not ready for economic collapse. Only 41% of Americans have $1,000 to cover any emergency. This is a story that keeps coming up by many, many writers, and it's approached from different ways, but it's all the same old problem. If they had a car breakdown, if they had a medical emergency and had no insurance, they're going to be in deep trouble. Another headline, gold may top 2,000 this year. I think it'll do it. If I look at what's going on, it's funny, John. I did something last week just out of curiosity. It's one of those oddball things I actually wrote down. September 27th of 2018, gold sat at $1,185 an ounce. 1 month later, it was up to $1,485. December of 2019, just a month ago, we watched it hit 1514. Currently, it's depending on what you look at, it's up, it's down, who cares? Currently sitting at about 1567. We're talking 32-33% gain in just over not even a year and a half. People don't pay attention. They don't get it. And yet they're dumping it all in the stock market thinking that's where they're going to make it. And yet if they would take a close look at everything we covered on the program this morning, I'm going to tell you what, the stock market's in big, big, big trouble. As one writer called it, it is a corporate debt bubble, a train wreck in slow motion. And it's going to catch us all. Every one of us is going to catch.
Well, and just as it affected us in 2008 with this, and the way the media covered it, oh, it's a banking crisis. But they never really picked apart the moving parts in this, Jeff, to show and demonstrate exactly why this happened. How the Glass-Steagall Act, how this whole thing was allowed to happen. Glass-Steagall Act was pretty much ignored. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt was the guy that did that, and he knew something about market crashes. So, you know, that's one of the few things I think this guy did that was any good. But at any rate, they do the Glass-Steagall Act, and all of a sudden, under George Bush and Billy Clinton, that kind of up and disappears. And then magically, the great New York banks, well, they get a little speculative. They want to move into the real estate market. Well, what harm could that be? And then we saw the end result of that.
It's interesting you bring that up. Tomorrow at about I'm on Mountain Time, as you well know, and at about 10 minutes after midnight tonight, my time, I have an interesting piece that we've made a decision to publish. I made some brief reference to it this morning. One of the most amazing pieces I've read in a long time by Alistair MacLeod called How to Return to Sound Money. He's an interesting writer. He doesn't spend a lot of time doing embedded links and all this other stuff, but he makes a lot of interesting references. One of the most profound pieces I've ever read, and it talks about going back to sound money. And he made reference to Ludwig von Mises' book from the 1950s called The Theory of Money and Credit, which is only available by buying a book somewhere. Well, guess what? I went ahead and put a link in there. He talks about Smoot-Hawley, which goes back to 29. Which, you know, Hoover basically signed into law, and the pros and the cons of all of that stuff. One other real interesting piece, which I did not see until a little over an hour ago, was he made reference to a banker back in the 1920s and 30s, whose name was Hjalmar Schacht, S-C-H-A-C-H-T. I right this minute can't think of his middle name. What was the guy that said, "Go West, young man"?
Horace Greeley.
Horace Greeley. That was the guy's actual middle name. Now, you've never seen that in print. The only reason I know it is because his great grandnephew or whatever is my personal friend of 50 years, and he's also my CPA and my attorney. And so I've heard stories about Schacht for many, many years. What's interesting is I have done so many pieces about him, not directly, but where he was deeply involved. Because he was Hitler. He was called into the, you know, the trials after World War II, but he was not found guilty because he was never a member of the party. He was a frickin' banker. The bankers aren't stupid. They know how to protect themselves. Look at this idiot that runs J.P. Morgan Chase. I want to vomit every time I see this guy. And Jamie Dimonstein, or whatever his name is. And this guy has pulled more dirt.
Diamond?
Yeah.
In his role of this biggest ripoff mankind has ever witnessed, his pay this year was some $37 million.
Oh, and that doesn't even cover his bonus.
No, not at all.
It's just unbelievable.
Nice work if you can get it.
It is. You know, and I continue to watch this stuff. Look, you and I have had this conversation so many times after the last quarter century, but I bought my first silver at the age of 10, and I began buying gold at the age of 12. And back in 1958, 59, 60, you really couldn't buy gold unless you knew somebody, because everybody was still looking over their shoulders at the ghost of Roosevelt. But the laws were reasonably specific, and I think about a week ago I did a very intense discussion of that whole thing and kind of broke it all down. I really was kind of flying off the cuff, but I know it so well. By 1954, they adjusted the so-called confiscatory laws, although it wasn't really confiscatory, because you could own gold in the form of a collection. Now, that meant you didn't mean you went out and bought 20, you know, a roll of 20 1924 St. Gaudens gold pieces, because you weren't a collector, you were a hoarder. It was different dates, different mint marks, maybe even different conditions, different denominations. And if you did it that way, you were free and clear. 1954, Congress, a year before the stock market recovered from the 29 crash, by the way, Congress got together and kind of changed the collectability factor that said any gold coin struck anywhere in the world prior to 1933 was considered historical, thereby collectible, et cetera, et cetera. That's why I've spent so much time over the years with the Swiss and the French, right, and the Italian, the South American, the German 20 mark pieces, even had some marvelous, it's been 15 years or more, I had access to a marvelous collection of Russian gold pieces.
I've never seen.
Those have actually become very rare, and I probably sold several hundred of them, maybe 500 or 600 for all I remember. And they were tough to get. You had to know where to get them, and I had suppliers that were able to get them. And they weren't, you know, they had a little bit more of a premium than the other stuff, but they were that interesting to people. And, you know, certainly done a lot with sovereigns over the years. Then I was able to get access to a lot of the South American gold pieces. You know, the small denominated ones. Mm-hmm. Occasionally you'd find one ounce pieces or a little bit more. Did a lot with the Mexican Libertads over the years. And it is interesting. It's not to try to play coin collector, but to make it look like that's what you're doing. And that's what keeps you quiet. Yeah. And it's interesting because this article, to some minor degree, this piece by, what the heck's his name? I'm just totally blanking right now. And I didn't realize he must be British, Alistair MacLeod. The way his spelling kind of gives him away. He's not American. He could be Canadian for all I know. But a lot of interesting stuff. I would strongly urge anyone who's up and at it tomorrow to open up Morgana Precious Metals. If that's confusing to some of you, for years you knew it as either Flying Eagle Gold or Kettle Moraine Precious Metals. You go on the internet, Kettle Moraine Precious Metals is too long of a name, so we shorten things up. So Morgana Precious Metals, it's still Kettle Moraine is the company you deal with. And, you know, when you deal with us here as listeners to RBN, RBN, you know, sees a portion of the proceeds on this. And I'd far rather be doing that than going the other way. You know,
boy, you're not kidding. By the way, last Friday, Jeff, Fed Chairman Powell, he assessed that the core of the financial sector appeals resilient. Now, the Standard & Poor's index closed down just 0.90%, but shares of J.P. Morgan, they closed significantly, a decline of 2.48%. Citigroup was down 1.73%, Goldman Sachs 1.49%. At any rate, that was Friday. Mm-hmm. The market took a little bit of a hit. Well, this morning, it took a little bit of a hit yesterday. I was a little bit of confusion with Steve Elkins yesterday on the program. I saw that the Dow closed down 200 and almost 40. Did it close down or was it up? Do you remember?
Yesterday?
Yeah.
You know what? I couldn't tell you. Okay. I have to go back and look.
No, that's fine.
I don't necessarily watch it moment by moment.
No,
it was up today 187
okay,
points.
Okay, well, this is the point I'm getting around to. This morning at 8:37 a.m., and that was Eastern time, folks. Now, that's almost a full hour before the markets opened. Dow Jones futures were showing a loss of 454 points.
That's right. I did read that this morning.
Suggesting a deep red ink open for the stock market at 9:30. But guess what magically happened? The New York Fed had already, in this morning, pumped in $49.6 billion in these repo loans to its Wall Street trading houses at an interest rate of 1.55%. There is Mr. Chairman Powell's financial resilient sector of Wall Street. They're pumping insane amounts of money in there to try to give the illusion, Jeff, that this market is A-OK and that we're slowly coming out of this financial crisis.
Well, and that once again goes back to the piece that we shared with the audience this morning about the corporate debt bubble. It is not just talking about corporate debt, but it is getting very in depth, and it's currently posted at Morgana. We've got it under one of the Dateline, today's date, double legal headlines. Open it up tonight, scroll down, get it. Corporate debt bubble, train wreck in slow motion. It is one of the best pieces I've ever read about it because of the simple way it's done. And it takes us into the ins, the outs, the ups and downs, how it's affecting all of us. And these declines, and they're above their peak. And all right, so great. They push the numbers up and it makes it look good. But as you've just brought up, at what expense? What are we paying for it? Yeah. AT&T's got $180 billion worth of debt. SoftBank, whoever they are, is $154 billion. Apple at $136 billion. Verizon, $114 billion. Comcast, $112 billion. GE, $115 billion. Shell Oil, how can they be $77 billion in debt? Almost all these companies are buying their stock back. And what purpose? Because, oh, that's right, that way there'll be fewer shares available, and therefore they can turn around and put it back on the market for much bigger money. This is insanity. It is pure insanity, and people don't see it. They just don't get it.
It's like anything else in this country, Jeff. The American people are children. They can't take information and make that work to figure out problems in their own life. We're just a bunch of children. And we need mommy and daddy to look after us. And by the way, we're not gonna bother you giving you this cumbersome, instruction. Or we're gonna take care of everything. Just sit down, mm-hmm. children, and be mm-hmm. quiet. We'll handle it.
Just marvelous.
Jeff, and a lot of people don't understand what has happened here. You know, we had the biggest ripoff ever witnessed by mankind. I can safely say that is 100% true and correct statement, okay? We had between $1.1 and $1.4 quadrillion, okay, in derivatives that these magical magicians spewed out of the markets. And then the whole damn thing fell apart. Well, the governments are sitting there looking and going, okay, what do we do now? Well, the government, the United States government, at least, it's got a little bit of fascism attached to it, corporatism, whatever you want to call it, cooperation between corporations and the government. But the government itself is not a business. It does not turn a profit, doesn't generate anything. It just simply takes what's there on the table and divvies it up and pays it out. If there's not enough on the table,
who do they take it from? They take it from us.
Bingo. But if there's not enough on the table, we'll just borrow more to make our obligations good. But here's the point of this, Jeff. The government is not an entity that makes money, so here they are paying out, dispersing, borrowing money. Well, whose shoulders does that land squarely on?
Ours, of course.
That's right. So here we, if you walked into a bank out there in Arizona, you walked into a bank with a gun and you held that thing up, do you think they might look down on you for doing that? Do you think you possibly might get shot, killed, arrested, jailed for how many years? Point being, it's illegal. But yet the banks in this country ripped off the American people and the government aided and abetted in this takedown. Jeff,
that's right.
I feel worse than violated.
Yeah, and never mind. I was going to make a statement, but it's a family hour. We won't make that statement. hey, question for you. What are you doing Sunday?
I don't know.
Well, I got a couple of spare Super Bowl tickets. So they cost me $9,000 apiece. You want to go? $9,000 apiece for a stinking football game.
Do you actually have Super Bowl tickets?
No, of course not. Are you kidding? I saw this thing this morning. I said, who would pay $9,000 to go to any football game?
Well,
And then halftime show with all these young kids around it, jumping up and down, dancing with whoever the performers are. How do they afford to get in there?
They're cast members? Hang on a second. Let me take the top of the hour break here. I'll bring back Jeff on the other side of the top of the hour here for a few minutes. Folks, Super Bowl. I think this might be I was thinking about this morning, Jeff. This may be the year that I don't even bother to watch the damn Super Bowl.
I don't. Green Bay didn't make it.
Cheesehead. Okay.
Let's
take the top of the aisle. I'm a Lions fan. We haven't won a championship.
You're one state away. What do you expect? Well, Lions and Chiefs, man.
Which hasn't won a championship since 1957. Okay, we'll be back.
How would you like to earn an extra $10,000 or more a month from the comfort of your home? We show you how to win with a home-based business opportunity. This could be one of the best financial decisions you ever make. Work from home, full-time or part-time. Plus, you'll never have to talk to anyone. Our professional sales team closes all your sales for you, and you keep 70% of all the sales made. You could be earning money while you're sleeping, shopping, working out, wherever you are, day or night. Our system goes to work for you. You can make a great income without any special computer skills or sales training. Plus, you get paid fast, within just 24 to 48 hours after our professional sales team closes a sale for you. Let us help you eliminate your financial concerns. You could be earning enough money to pay off debt, buy a house, a car, or whatever the case may be. We've got you covered. If you'd like to add an extra $10,000 or more a month to your portfolio, and you would like to know exactly what we're doing and how we're doing it, go now to www.getstartedwithus.com. That's www.getstartedwithus.com. Again, that's www.getstartedwithus.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.